Bibles to 1 Chronicles chapter 28. 1 Chronicles chapter 28. You're going to have to listen tonight. This study is a little bit, it's not quite as line upon line, precept upon precept as usual, but it's one of the great secrets, the science of being constant. 1 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 1. David is handing the baton now to his son, Solomon, and here we go. And David assembled all the princes of Israel, the princes of the tribes, and the captains of the companies that ministered to the king by course, and the captains over the thousands, and captains over hundreds, the stewards over all the substance and possession of the king, and of his sons, with the officers, and with the mighty men, with all the valiant men under Jerusalem. David the king stood up upon his feet and said, "Hear me, my brethren, and my people. As for me, I had in mine heart to build an house of rest for the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and for the footstool of our God, and have made ready for the building. But God said unto me, Thou shalt not build an house for my name, because thou hast been a man of war, and hast shed blood. Howbeit, the Lord God of Israel chose me before all the house of my father to be king over Israel forever, for he hath chosen Judah to be the ruler, and of the house of Judah, the house of my father, and among the sons of my father, he liked me to make me king over all Israel. And of all my sons, for the Lord hath given me many sons, he hath chosen Solomon, my son, to sit upon the throne of the kingdom of the Lord over Israel. And he said to me, Solomon, my son, thy son, he shall build my house and my courts, for I have chosen him to be my son, and I will be his father." Here's my text. "Moreover, I will establish his kingdom forever if he be constant to do my commandments and my judgments as at this day." God said, I'll be blessing Solomon if he be constant to do my commandments and my judgments. What he's saying is, if Solomon in his duties for God will be constant. I don't know of anything more important than being constant, and I won't talk to you about it tonight. I do not claim to have arrived in any area of the Christian life, but I think people say to me, especially young preachers, "Brother Hiles, thank you for not changing." And I'm going to talk to you tonight about how to stay constant. I hope you'll listen carefully. Father, we thank you for these Wednesday night studies, and the privilege of learning more about the Christian life. Actually, we say the science of the Christian life. We're simply saying we ought to study it, live it on purpose. I pray you bless us tonight as we discuss what I think is a very important subject. In Jesus' name. And I've outlined this one tonight about 8 times, because I never got a satisfactory outline. Now that I look at the 8th one, I wish I'd used the first one instead. But I know what I want to say, but bundling it up has been a real problem tonight for me. But I do. So this may be one of those scrambled egg kind of Bible studies. But I know some of the secrets to being constant. All right, sit up straight. Look right this way. And so you can pass the pop quiz we give you at any moment during the service tonight. We flew to Philippines. My travel agent, the Hoosier Travel Agency, I've done business with them so long, and literally millions of miles of business with them. And just about every week I buy a ticket, round trip ticket somewhere. And the lady who works at our travel agency's husband is an employee, United Airlines. There are 9 of us that flew together over to the Philippine Islands, and he got us, of all things, first-class seats. No charge to us. He got us first-class seats. Now, you can't imagine what that is. First class overseas. Those seats are, you can't reach the seat in front of you even by bending over. You got to get out of the seat to get to it. And the seats totally recline. I mean, you just go to bed at night, they totally recline. and food, my soul. There's no way to describe it. Now, they had a full course meal. They started off with a little container of warm mixed nuts. Delicious. They had in there, I mean warm now, mixed nuts. They had in there pecans and cashews and Brazil nuts, and they had in there hazelnuts and so forth. And after we had that, then they came and brought us bread and butter. And I love bread and butter. I love any kind of bread, as long as it's got butter on it, any kind of butter, as long as it's on bread. And then they brought us some horses Dovers. They brought us some hors d'oeuvres. It doesn't say that. That's not what it says, but they bought us some of that horses Dover stuff. And then they brought us salad. And then they brought us the entree. That means that's the main stuff. And then they brought us dessert. And then they brought us cheese. I love cheese. I love cheese. I'm talking, folks, about a 7-course meal. Now, nobody enjoyed it more than I did. Because, see, my life is built on each part of my life being its own entity and own compartment. Now, I'll tell you how to enjoy a 7-course meal. Eat it. Now, let's go to the next point. But here's the way I enjoy it. I eat every course as if that were all I was going to eat. I focus my attention on that. It leads to nothing else. I mean, I eat the bread and butter as if that's all I'm going to have. And I enjoy it because I just take that one little compartment. And then those warm nuts. If you ever have a chance to eat some of those warm nuts, you ought to do it. But I take one at a time. And savor it, just one at a time, until I start taking two at a time. And for the end, I'm doing it like that. But I like to just focus on one course. To me, the bread and butter is not leading up to the entree. To me, the salad is not getting ready for the entree. I eat the salad just as if that were the only thing I were going to eat. And every course of it, I take and enjoy it as if that were all of it. Each is its own little entity and own little compartment. Now, I like to savor each one. Now, let's take the matter of pizza. I said something about Jesus. You didn't say a word. But I like pizza, but I want to say this. I like each thing on pizza better alone. Just give me sausage by itself. Just give me cheese by itself. Just give me bread by itself. Let everything stand alone. Now, life is that way. Most of us live pizza lives. It's all mixed up. It's all together. And because of that, we have no schedule. Everything is all mixed up together. Now, my life is not that way. My life is built in compartments. I live by schedule. For example, if you're going to be constant, you need to have a daily schedule. Constant. See, now, I'm going to tell you how not to change. I'm going to tell you how to be constant. The word constant means that you're predictable, that you don't change. Now, you're not going to change everything in your life without changing in your life. You follow me? If you change the ingredients over and over again, then the life itself is going to change. Now, the way you keep changing and the way you stay constant is that you live by schedule. First, a daily schedule. You ought to get up the same time every day. I get up every morning by 11 o'clock. But I regularly get up at 3:30, go to the washroom, and go back to bed. But if you're going to be constant, you ought to have a daily schedule. That means that you ought to get up about the same time. I would suggest nobody get up, let your getting up time vary over 15 minutes or so, and go to bed about the same time. Most of you get up the same time and you go to sleep same time on Wednesday night, for example, about 8:10. I'm saying that have a daily schedule. Then have a weekly schedule. Not only have your days are all the same, but your weeks are all the same. Yesterday at noon, I was having a question and answer time with a group of preachers and full-time workers. Next Tuesday at noon, I'll be having a question and answer time with a group of preachers and full-time workers. Last week at Tuesday at noon, I was having a question and answer time with a group of preachers and full-time workers. I have a daily schedule. And let me listen to me now. I'm talking to you on purpose now. You can talk to each other when you get home. I'm talking to you now. I have a daily schedule, have a weekly schedule. I go to the airport every Monday morning. I do the same thing when I get there. I get me a bagel. I always do. Used to get a hot dog. They change the hot dogs out there. And I get me a bagel. And I eat a bagel. But I don't like any cheese on it. Don't like any Philadelphia cream cheese on it. I don't want it warmed. I want a cold, plain bagel. I get me a cup of coffee. Believe it or not, I get a cup of coffee, it's one of the sins I've fallen into as I've gotten older, the same thing. Then I board the plane at the same time. I don't mean the same time because all the planes don't leave at the same time, but I board the same amount of minutes basically before the flight takes off. Now I sit down the plane. And I do the same thing every Monday morning when I sit down on the plane. Same thing. And here's the way it works. If you live according to schedule, it's amazing how your schedule will almost make you live by it. For example, I don't take naps in the daytime except on Monday morning. I get sleepy when the plane backs off from the gate. I don't know why. When the plane takes off, I'm not sleepy anymore. I take a nap between the gate. Just takes about 10 minutes. I take a nap between the gate and takeoff time. I don't know why, but I do. And I want to be sure to wake up before takeoff time so I can help the pilot and keep that thing in good shape. But I live according to schedule. You see, if you're going to be constant in your and predictable, then you plan your schedule, and then you obey your schedule, and then you become a constant type of person. I have a daily schedule, I have a weekly schedule, and I have a monthly schedule. There are certain things I do every month. I pay my bills. let's go on to the next one. But I have things I do every month, and then I believe in an annual schedule. I believe in tradition. I believe that every Christmas ought to be celebrated the same way. I think every special day ought to be celebrated the same way. You say, Brother Howes, doesn't that get boring? No, it gets constant. You become predictable. People say sometimes, all the many things you do, Brother Howes, you're going to have a nervous breakdown. Folks don't have nervous breakdowns that do a lot of things. Folks have nervous breakdowns that do one thing all the time. That's the folks. I mean, nervous breakdowns don't come. I learned one time that everything is somebody's vacation. Everything. Here's a guy who works down in the office building. What does he do for relaxation or vacation? Please put your pens down now and look at me and quit taking notes. What is he doing? What does he do for vacation? He goes out in the country and builds a shed on a house, or builds him a little country house beside the lake somewhere. Now, that's his vacation, because he's downtown. What does the fellow lives out in the country do? He goes downtown Chicago on vacation. What does the golfer Jack Nicklaus do on vacation? He plays tennis. What does the tennis player Jimmy Connors do on vacation? He plays golf. Now, I learned one time that everything is somebody's diversion. So I spend all my life on vacation. I got many things to do, and I do them on schedule. For example, Saturday morning, I get up, and 8:30, I meet with the principals. I meet with Brother Young and Brother Sisson and Brother Vogel and Brother Boyd every Saturday morning at 8:30. We meet till 9:45 or so, and then I'm invaded by a bunch of snotty-nosed girls that come by, that come teenage soul winning, and they come in, and we have a board meeting of the high school and vote on how to change the high school and everything. But then after the principals leave, then Brother Young and I meet and discuss his departments at the college. After he leaves, Brother Evans comes in, and Dr. Evans and I, we discuss his departments over which he oversees at the college. Now, that's my life. Da 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 da. The rhythm, the rhythm, the rhythm, the rhythm, and the rhythm. Now, I'm saying that's the way you're constant. If you live a scheduled life, then you'll become scheduled, and then your schedule will make you a constant person. I've said this often. I don't have a boss. Nobody is here at the church who makes me do my work. I don't have a boss. Now, everybody here, I wouldn't call myself a boss, but everybody here has somebody that's over them in some capacity. But I don't have anybody to whom I'm responsible. So I made myself a boss. My boss is my schedule. And I live my schedule. You said sounds pretty boring to me. I'm sorry, folks. I'm not living to be unboring or boring. I'm living to get something done in my life. And if I'm going to get something done, I've got to have a rhythm. And I'm going to tell you something else. The people that live by rhythm are the people that are the happiest people, and the people that have the less nervous breakdowns, and the people that have less trouble in life, those that live by schedule, and there's a rhythm to their life, and a rhythm to their life, and a rhythm to their life. And I've said before, that's why you have so many suicides around Christmas time, before folks lose their rhythm in life. So I'm saying that that I have a schedule, and my schedule is my boss. Now, I am faithful to my schedule. I want to say something right here, and I hope I won't offend anybody, but if I do, I still what I believe. I think that when something is regularly scheduled, it ought to take precedence over something that is not regularly scheduled. For example, I'm going to make somebody mad here. I'm going to try to anyway. I hope I can. Let's suppose that you belong to a WMS circle. Let's suppose that your circle meets the same time every month. Now, let's suppose that you belong to a Sunday school class, has a meeting the same night, the WMS circle. Now, I'm not saying it's sinful for you not to go to the class party, but I'm saying if you're going to be constant, you go to the WMS circle. If you belong to the choir, for example, you go to choir. That's the regular thing. The regular thing, now again, I'm not talking about right or wrong right now. I'm talking about if you want to be a constant person. With exception, maybe one Wednesday night a year, I walk through that door at 10:45 on Sunday morning, and at 7 o'clock on Sunday night, and about 7:30 on Wednesday night, I walk through that door. And you expect me to walk through that door. And when I don't walk through that door, if I'm somewhere else, I go crazy. I stayed awake. I don't know what time it was over there, but it just come crazy time while you were having service. But I was awake. I couldn't sleep. Dr. Evans kept me awake, and he preached so long. I like to never went to sleep. But I'm simply saying I had to be here during the service on Wednesday night. Now, folks, listen to me. This thing about, what we're going to do today. Well, set what you're going to do today. I think meals ought to be on time. I think every child ought to have the privilege of having breakfast with his family every morning. Well, you just say we're not breakfast eaters. You're not constant either. I'm talking about, come to think of it, I think eat what you can whenever you can. I'm in a habit of eating. I don't want to lose my job. But I'm saying, I think you ought to eat breakfast on time. And I think the family circle ought to sit around the table together.
And I think you ought to eat dinner on time. Down south, it's dinner's at noon, and up here, it's at night. So I just eat both of them. But I'm saying you ought to eat dinner on time and on schedule. Live by rhythm. That's the way you're constant. You see, the more things you force yourself to do and on schedule and on time, then you'll become a person that is okay. You folks that wake up at the same time. Anybody here has an internal alarm clock? You get up every morning at the same time, and you don't have to set the alarm because you get up at the same time. Anybody like that? Raise your hand, would you please? Sure. A lot of you are. Why? You get up at the same time every morning. You don't need the alarm clock. Why? Because you have that rhythm and on schedule and so forth. I recall years ago when Dorothy Lyons and Jim Lyons were here. I was at church, and I was calling Ms. Hiles. So I never had called home before. I called Jim a lot, but I called him from the house. I wouldn't say I never had called home, but I'd called Jim Lyons a lot. And I called that day, and I was calling Ms. Hiles. And so Dorothy Lyons answered. And I said, "Honey?" She said, "Brother Hiles." I said, oh. Now, I remember one day I was given instructions from headquarters to go up to A&P grocery store and get some bread and milk. I got in the car, drove down to Columbia Street. The car turned right on Columbia. It drove several miles down to May Street. It turned left on May. It came to Calumet, turned right on Calumet, crossed the tracks, turned left on Kane Street, came down the alley here, parked in front of the church. And I said to myself, what am I doing? You see, my car didn't know the way to the A&P, but it only knew the way to church. And I forgot to tell the car where to go. Now, you say, "Brother Hiles, that's getting old and sot in your ways. You're getting the idea. And by the way, older people who are sot in their ways are happier than young people that live helter-skelter lives, too. I'm saying if you want to amount to anything, you've got to be constant. If you're constant, see, the subconscious comes by forcing the conscious. In other words, you force yourself to do a certain thing at a certain time and a certain way, and you force yourself to do the same thing at the same time in the same way, and you force yourself to do the same thing in the same time at the same way, till after a while it gets in the subconscious and then it transfers, and that's what character is. Character is a subconscious doing of right. But it doesn't become subconscious until you force yourself to do it time after time after time consciously, so it works its way in the subconscious. And God said, "I want Solomon to be constant." He said, I'll bless him as long as he's constant in the keeping of my commandments. What does that mean? He does what he's supposed to do. He does what I tell him to do. He does it when I tell him to do it. The secret is schedule. Now, I'm going to be very, very careful here. Listen very carefully. I'm going to tell you about a counseling session I had recently. And please do not snicker, and I've got to tiptoe through the tulips here real carefully and walk on eggshells. But I was counseling with a couple, and he said she's not affectionate. And I said, "Brother Johnny, if I had to kiss that puss, I wouldn't be affectionate either." But no, it wasn't Brother Johnny. It was Elaine. But no, he said she's not affectionate. Now, wait a minute. Now, please follow me, and I hope I can get through this without embarrassing myself and you. I said to this couple, I said, "The reason she's not affectionate is you have not taken each expression of affection and made it an end in itself." You following me? For example, let's take in a romance, and I was talking to this young couple. I said, I divided married life into these divisions: fun, conversation, date, sweet talk, hand-holding, embracing, and kissing, and then I won't go any further, because you understand what I'm trying to say. Now listen carefully. I said, let each one of those things be a separate activity. No one leads to another. I said to that young man, I said, "Sometime walk up to your wife and say, why don't we just take a walk and hold hands? That's all we do. The holding hand is not working your way to a hug. Why don't you sit down on the sofa sometimes and say, let's take about 30 minutes and let's just hug each other. But you see what I'm trying to say? To the wife, she felt like everything the husband was doing was leading to something else. And they were not enjoying the fun, the conversation, the date, the sweet talk, the hand-holding, the embracing, and the kissing and so forth. Hey, it'd be a lot of fun for young couples sometime. Of course, old couples too old to do this, but it'd be sort of fun for young couples sometime just to say, let's get in the married couples. I tell you what, after I get through with this study tonight, we're going to have more folks Sunday morning. They'll be flooding my office wanting to set wedding dates. But why don't you just say to your wife sometime, honey, let's just get in the car and let's go down to the park somewhere. And let's just kiss. That's all we're going to do. We're just going to kiss. Now, I'm saying, I told that couple, I told him, I said, everything you do is leading to something else. But I said, take your romance. There ought to be times where you just have fun together. And that's all. And that's the end in itself. There ought to be times, just have conversation together. And that's all. Well, this is good. And have that be an end in itself. Then there ought to be times when you have a date. And that's all. Just a date. And that's an end in itself. Nowadays, in this generation we live in, if a guy won't commit adultery with a gal, he didn't want to take her out somewhere. Now, I want to tell you something, folks, that there's nothing quite as underrated as just holding hands or just an embrace. And I told this young couple, I said, look, set some times where you take each little segment of affection and that's all you do. That's the secret to life. Everybody's going somewhere. No, sir. No, sir. Just to take life and divide life into compartments. I know women in this room that would be affectionate, I'm sure, if their husband would be satisfied sometime with just take a walk and holding hands. I hope I'm not being inappropriate here, but I want to help you young couples. I want to tell you something, fellas. If your wife thought there were times in your marriage where you just wanted to hug her and that's all, are you single folks drooling right now? Then you'd be amazed. I'm simply saying, and by the way, there ain't nothing real bad about hugging. There ain't nothing real bad about holding hands. I remember. Franklin Roosevelt was president. I'm saying, folks, that everybody is attaching life together. Have life in compartments. There ought to be some time where you take your young wife on a date and that's all you're going to do. There was a time when you just got to look at her. That was great. Now enjoy it. There's more to look at now than it was back in those days. Enjoy it. I'm talking to hundreds of young people, Howells Anderson College students right now. Put your pen down, please. I'm talking to hundreds of Howells Anderson College students right now who would give the shirt off their backs or give all the money they got in their billfold just to hold hands. Right? How many would give an awful lot to hold hands? Raise your hand, would you please? All right, see me after service. I need an awful lot. And we can swing a deal. Everybody's got a prize. And I got guys tingling all over this room tonight. But look, if you could just have held her hand, okay, now you got her. Why don't sometimes you just hold her hand? I'm saying whether it's in your schedule, whether it's in your romance, whether it's in your work, whatever it is, let every segment of life stand on its own. Boy, that's important. Each one an entirely different segment. Each standing on its own. Each an end in itself. nothing to lead to something else. Everything is a big deal. Each is a key to life. Now let's go on. I like to go to church. One other person here likes to go to church also. And he's not saying amen because he likes to go to church. He's saying amen because he thinks I like to go to church. I love the congregational singing. I love it. And there are very few songs I don't know. If I knew the Bible, I could know that songbook. I'd be fabulous. But I can stand up here and sing song after song after song after song. I've been singing all. I love the congregational song time. I love the praying time. I love the special music time. I love the announcement time. I really do. That's why I make them. I let Jorgensen make a few, but he always messes them up. But I love the announcement time. R.G. Lee used to say, I'm going to have you, sir, come to my church just to make the announcements. Just for special meetings. I love the announcement time. I love the praise time. I love the giving time. I love the preaching time. But sometimes I like each alone when I go to church. When we sing the congregational song, that's all I'm doing. That's it. That is a unit in itself. That's all we did. That's enough for me. I love the giving time. I love for you to give. I love the giving time. I love the special music time. You know, but none of these is dependent upon the other. Preachers every once in a while say, and I hate this, everything is getting me in a mood to preach. Not me, brother. I'm in a mood to preach anytime, anywhere. I'll preach in the drop of a hat and furnish the hat. I'd hate to think I had to have some song to get me in the mood to preach. All I got to do is stop and think my name written in heaven, and here we go. I'm ready to go. Oh, you say, boy, I tell you what, that, we got to, why, shoot. I mean, amen. I savor everything. I wasn't going to tell you this, but some of mine, Brother Ray, and four others of our contest winners came down to Texas on the contest, and they came down to hear me preach Monday night. Everybody should be in that service Monday night. I got to preach. And I simply said, they had a mic right here, I simply said, let me test this mic. I tested it, and it was too soft and too bassy. So I said, wherever the PA man is, I said, PA man, would you turn the treble up and the volume up on this side mic here? I looked through the PA, where the PA system was. A fellow gets up over here somewhere. He walks down the altar, walks across over here, and walks out in a room back here. The PA system is back there by itself. All the time I'm standing up there trying to figure out something to do. I told stories. I sang solos. I mean, but I'm just kidding about that. Well, I'm lying. But so all he had to do is just take that little volume and twist it to the right, and take that treble and twist it to the right. But something happened, and it started whistling. And it kept on whistling. And I couldn't say anything to him because he was back there in that room. He couldn't see me. He couldn't hear me. I couldn't see him hear him. All I knew is I couldn't do anything. So I just stood there. And the folks just looked at me, which is worth the trip. Wasn't long till another fellow back in the back. He walks down and walks across. He goes back there. All the time, I'm about to... You say, Brother House, that get you out of the mood to preach? No way. I stays in a mood to preach. Then, pretty soon, there's a black fella back there in the back. He decides he wants to go back. And there's three of them to turn the volume to the right. And the thing kept ringing, ringing, and kept ringing, and kept ringing, and kept ringing, and kept ringing. Finally, I said, come on back in. But they couldn't hear me say, come on back in. So finally the pastor decided he'd go back there. So he gets up, he walks down the stairs, he goes back there. Now I got more folks back here than I got out here. Brother Ray will tell you, I know what to do. I said, anybody know a joke? Anybody know a story? I just kill time. Finally, they all came out, and I decided to go down the front row and stand on the front pew and preach most of my sermon. Finally, I'd go to the pulpit for a while, go down there most of the time. And then, great big fat fella here on the front row decided he wanted to go home. Now, bear in mind, we've been at 15 minutes now, and I'm not preaching yet, hardly. Just got started again. And he wanted to go home slowly. And he wanted to go out that door there. There's the door over here, but he wanted to go out that door there. And the fellow beside him decides he wants to go with him. So they stand up, look around the people, and everything but throw kisses, and they walk out. What else was it? Yeah, some kid started yelling, but there's something else happened. Oh, I know what it was. I was preaching, I stand behind the pulpit. I'd come back up behind the pulpit. All of a sudden, a fellow over here on my left comes and walks toward me. I knew he was going to attack me or what. And here in the pulpit was the tape recorder. And he had to turn the tape over. We're talking about 30 minutes now. I've been trying to preach for 30 minutes. And then, there's a black fellow, wasn't it, Brother Ray? A black fellow decided he wanted to go work in the baptistry. He goes up in the baptistry. While I'm preaching, he's working. I don't know what he's doing. He's working in the baptistry. Every once in a while, I look through the curtain to see who's out there, you know. He said, that gets you out of the mood to preach? No, sir. Got me in the cotton-picking mood to preach. Now, you see, you don't have to get me in the mood to preach. I mean, through all of that, I kept on going. I was on the front row, walking across here, running around here, and standing up on that front chair and having time. Invitation time came, we had 2/3 of the audience down the altar. So we're trying to say, I'm trying to say the preaching is a segment. I don't want any part of my life to be necessary for the other part. I want each part of my life to be in a segment. And I want, you haven't got to get me in the mood to preach. And you're saying, I when you stand up here and you sing a solo or a special number, I want to enjoy the special. I'm not trying to get in the mood to preach. I didn't need you gals up here tonight to sing to get me in the mood to teach a Bible study. I needed you to sing because I like to hear you sing. Now, that's what's wrong with your life. You live a pizza life, a hash life, a life of stew. What do you call a casserole? You live a casserole life. Everything's all mixed up together. Now, I love casseroles, but I prefer to have my potatoes by themselves. And if you're going to give me cheese, okay, I don't mind having cheese on the potatoes, but now I'd prefer to have the cheese by itself. I'm saying most of our lives are so helter-skelter. They're pizza, they're casserole, they're hash, everything is all together, and everything leads to another. Now follow me carefully, hear me carefully. None of us is perfect here, and God knows I'm far from perfect here. But here's what happens. If any one of the steps to our enjoyment breaks down, it ruins everything. I have a sermon I used to preach, and then once every year or two, I'll preach it now, called Yesterday's Fantasies versus Today's Realities. And in our fantasies, we have it all scheduled exactly, the whole picture. But the whole picture doesn't always come to fruition. Each part of that picture ought to be its own, stand on its own, have its own little compartment, its own. And that's the way I live. Somebody said, Brother House, if problems come up at the college, do you panic? No, I don't panic. Well, do you jump right on them? No, not unless they're dire emergencies. Don't jump on them. I've got Saturday morning for that. Well,
Brother Hiles, if this, Dr. Evans, for example, at the college, we could go this today. He said, "Preacher, could I talk to you about something?" And I said, "How about Saturday?" I said, "Is it an emergency?" "No." "Well, how about Saturday?" That's going to take care of the college. I know that I have scheduled time to take care of the college, so I don't have to panic. "Oh, when will I do that?" I know what I'm going to do then. Now, the honest, simple truth is, that's what makes people constant. If you would schedule your life every day, a schedule, to where, and then enjoy each segment of that schedule. Every week, the same thing. Have a schedule. And then every month, have some things that you do each month. And then every year. I love tradition. I love tradition. I love to know what I'm going to do on Christmas. I'm going to go broke. It's tradition. But I love to know what I'm going to do. And so do you. Once a year, people stand up and sing, "Happy birthday to you." And all those candles are there. Make a wish. Make a wish. Blow them out. Same thing every year. But you let them forget it one year, and they're going to have some to pay. They're going to have Hades to pay. I mean, a bad place to pay. Now, you know why? It is tradition. And it is an annual thing that you want. And you expect it. And that's what's wonderful about life. If you live your life on schedule. I know what you do. You decide, listen to me now. You decide that you're going to get up every morning same time. Go to bed about the same time. And you can go to bed earlier now because Johnny Carson's not on anymore. And you decide you're going to eat. You don't decide you're going to eat. On schedule. And you decide that you're going to live your life on schedule. You will develop a life that is built, listen to me now, on habit. I wish I could get you to listen as much as I get you to giggle. On habit. And you become constant. Now see, every preacher, please don't misunderstand this, but every preacher I know in America, no, that's an exaggeration. It's a lie. Hundreds of preachers say to me every year, "I wish I could be as predictable as you are." And I often say, "Then be it. Then be it. Constant. Constant. Take each little segment of your life." Now, let me say this. I can help you enjoy church like you've never enjoyed it before. You know we have the Lord's Supper. I don't know what comes next. Because I am totally absorbed in the Lord's Supper. When you come to my office for counseling, I am in your family. I lose myself in your situation. Well, you sit with the house. When you go get all stuff done, you're going to get done. It's all settled. It's all scheduled. It's all outlined. I know when I'm going to get it done. And so when you come to my office, I'm not sitting there while I'm counseling with you saying, "Oh, brother, when can I prepare my sermon?" I know when I can prepare my sermons. It's all set. I live that way. God said, now get this. God said concerning Solomon, "I'll bless him as long as he's what? Pure." That's what he said. As long as he's what? As long as he's wise. That's what he said, though he was wise. As long as he is constant. I'll bless him as long as... Now, wait a minute. There's more to that than God saying he's constant, so I'll bless him. No, being constant is what initiates the blessing. In other words, again, I'll say, some of you
young men, and young ladies, if you would decide that you're going to go home and say to your wife, tonight is hand-holding night. Make it a big night. Hand-holding night. And you heard the story. Squeeze it four times. Do you love me? And she goes, no. She goes, yes, I do. And you go, how much? And you know the story. I had a boyfriend named Bob Keys in high school. Bob Keys, the girl named Sylvia Jensen. Now, Bob and Sylvia were wicked. You know, when I went to school, to be loose was to hold hands. Fallen women were the ones that held hands. Bob and Sylvia Jensen would hold hands. I sat right behind them in an auditorium. The auditorium seated about 2,000 people. Our school had about 2,000 students. We sat right back there, about four or five rows in the back. That's my assigned seat, right behind Bob and Sylvia Jensen. Well, they'd sit there in the auditorium when they're showing a movie or something, they'd hold hands. Now, I never did, but they did. I would have, but I couldn't find anybody who wanted to hold my hand. We're sitting there one day, and Bob would rub Sybil's hand like that, and I was right behind him. There's a movie on, his lights are out. He'd rub her hand like that. She'd rub his hand like that. Then he'd go, do you love me? Yes, I do. How much? So after a while, they quit holding hands. So I put my hand up and got Bob, my hand on Bob's hand, began to rub it like that. And Bob rubbed it back. And I rubbed his hand again, and he rubbed mine again. You're learning things about me, aren't you? And then I grabbed his hand, and I went, and he went, and I went, and we went, but my male voice started groaning. I thought he's going to kill me. I really did. In your schedule, in your eating, hey, you know why you weigh 400 pounds? If you would eat at the same time, now Keith does, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1. But if you would put your life, your schedule in compartments, your activities in compartments, even your romance in compartments, and your responsibilities in compartments, and every segment be an enjoyment in its own. You sit with the house, you enjoy taking a flying on an airplane? Never think about that. Never think about it. I enjoy my bagel. I enjoy my coffee. I enjoy my nap. I enjoy the takeoff. I enjoy reading the paper. I enjoy working on the plane. All these are my schedule. I enjoy the landing. I enjoy being met with the pastor at the airport. I enjoy going to my room. But I don't take a trip. I eat a bagel. I drink coffee. I read. I take off. I take a little nap. I read the paper. See, each of those things is a different enjoyment. It's not a trip. Each enjoyment. If you could live your life like a 7-course meal, and if every course of your life could be its own little enjoyable segment, it'd change your life. And not only that, it would make you a person who is constant. Becky was little. And of course, you heard me say this time and time again. When I'd push in the brakes, I'd reach out like that. I did that so much, every time I pushed the brake, I'd reach out like that. Still do it. If I stop quickly, I reach out. What for? Keep Becky from hitting the dash. Becky's 42. But she doesn't hit the dash. I keep her hitting the dash. several times. I have ridden with John R. Rice before. And I was driving, and I had to stop real quickly, and I held my hand out. I had to hold it out like this. With Keith, it was way up like that. But I was trying to, why? You see, if you will force yourself to be disciplined and keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on, then after you have forced yourself to live by schedule, then your schedule will take over and force you to live by it. And that's what character is. Character is when you subconsciously do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. But it does not get in your subconscious till you force yourself to do it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. You see, with the house, that sounds like being in a rut to me. It's exactly what I had in mind. We used to drive up 100 miles every Sunday morning to our little country church, sometimes on Saturday. And we'd drive to Bogota, Texas, then 3 miles out in the country. In those days, you didn't have farm-to-market roads, and you didn't have blacktop roads. Everything was a dirt road, and there's nothing quite as sticky as Texas black dirt. Now, we'd get up there, and it'd be raining, and it'd be two ruts. And as long as you stay in those ruts, you're going to make it. But you get out of those ruts and you're in trouble. But those ruts did not make themselves. Somebody went and came back and drove and came back and drove and came back. And every time they drove in those ruts, they became just a little bit deeper. I have driven on Texas country roads when I could take my hands off the steering wheel and drive slow enough, and the car would go in those ruts. That's what being constant is. Where you have done the same thing over and over and over and over again. Until instinctively, that's what you do. God said, Solomon, I'm going to bless you, but there's an end to it. When you quit being constant, what does that mean? Predictable. When you quit being predictable, when you quit being steady, when you quit being the same, I'm not going to bless you anymore. I'll bless you and your kingdom as long as you are constant. Shall we stand, please?